the condition that creates the conditions for wisdom to grow even stronger. Wisdom initially begins with hearing something, hearing some teachings, perhaps reading some teachings, reading something that expresses a perspective that perhaps resonates with us, or maybe doesn't. For myself, the notion of just meeting experience as it was, my friend said it was useful, but it didn't resonate with me of how it would work, but I borrowed the confidence of my friend. She said it was helpful and said, well, I'll give it a try. We'll see. And so there was a willingness to engage with that wisdom. And this is important, the engagement. When we hear teachings, it's this teaching is one of engagement, not of just taking information in. And so it begins there. It begins with hearing and reflecting a little bit, potentially. My own reflection at that point was, doesn't make sense to me, but my friend says it's useful, so I'm willing to try it. And so that was a little bit of a reflection, kind of a processing of trusting my friend and giving it a try. So there's the next level of wisdom is kind of a reflection aspect. How does it make sense to us? How does it make sense? Are we willing to engage with it? With that engagement, and this is a lot of where our practice is, the bringing that perspective into a connection with being aware. This is the awareness alone is not enough. It needs kind of the cultivation of that perspective, the perspective of wisdom. And initially that perspective is coming in often from our conceptual mind. And yet that cultivation of those two together, of awareness with even a conceptual wisdom, a willingness to explore experience in a particular way as described in the teachings. The combination of those two begins to reveal, begins to help awareness and wisdom to actually meet experience in a way that lets us understand the nature of experience. Impermanent. And because impermanent, unreliable, is a place to land for lasting happiness. So as awareness and wisdom begin to connect with the impermanent nature of experience, wisdom, when wisdom directly experiences the impermanent nature of experience, wisdom really gets it's not worth clinging to. In fact, there's nothing to cling to. At sometimes we see the impermanence so clearly, we see it's not actually something, coming into being and passing away. It's just continual change. There's not a thing there. And so wisdom begins to understand the futility of clinging. It begins to support the movement of letting go of that habit of clinging. And even of craving to cling to something. Even of wanting to cling to something. Wisdom is a mental formation. It's a quality that grows, that strengthens. Again, it strengthens in this way of being cultivated through learning, hearing, listening, reading, reflecting on, and then the cultivation of through direct experience. As a mental formation, sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. Or we could say, again, like awareness, there are gradations in that. Sometimes awareness may be feel strong. Sometimes it may feel weak. In the Abhidhamma perspective, more moments of awareness, more of those rapid little moments of awareness happening, make it feel, the experience feel like awareness, like wisdom is stronger. And so recognizing wisdom as a wholesome quality of mind, this wisdom that understands the impermanent nature of experience, the unreliable nature of that impermanent experience, the process nature of experience, that there's no self, that experience is not self, not I, not me, not who I am. Recognizing wisdom as a wholesome quality supports its cultivation. Like any other wholesome quality of mind, becoming aware of it strengthens it. As we become aware of awareness, it creates the conditions for awareness to strengthen. As we become aware of wisdom at work, it becomes a condition for that wisdom to strengthen. And likewise, on the flip side, you know, as we become aware of the unwholesome qualities, it creates the conditions for those to weaken. So becoming aware of wisdom when I first when Sayadaw at one point kind of inclined me, he said, you know, notice when wisdom is working, you know, just kind of be aware of that. But again, not something to try to do so much, more of a kind of a maybe I can know that wisdom is working, not a trying to find it so much, but more of that, maybe dropping in the question, how can I see wisdom at work, something like that. When he first gave me that kind of instruction, I really had no clue what he meant. How is that even possible? You know, I thought of wisdom as something like separate from the whole experience, or I don't know what I thought wisdom was. I thought of it as something like really big or grand, or I wasn't thinking of it as something that was arising in the, possibly arising in the moment and supporting the seeing of something in the moment. And so that began a kind of a curiosity, and how that exploration began was that whenever I noticed that there was some kind of sense of ease or a sense of, you know, okayness with experience or a feeling of release, it's like, well, wisdom must be working. That was kind of coming in through the intellectual side and understanding that when wisdom is working, there's the movement towards ease and peace and freedom from suffering. So, okay, wisdom must be working there. That must be wisdom at work. I don't really directly see it, but that must be wisdom at work. So that's where it began. It's just that kind of reflection. And then as I noticed it, I kind of began to see there's a lot of different ways we see wisdom at work. We just don't quite recognize it as wisdom working. So I just want to offer a few. There's probably a ton of ways to see wisdom at work, but just a few kind of common ones that I've noticed that are kind of more, I've heard a lot of other people describing them too. And it's like, yeah, when I hear somebody describe that, I say, that's wisdom. That's wisdom working right there. So one of the first ways that we feel wisdom working is when we feel a kind of a shift of perspective around something difficult. You know, we might experience that we have a little bit of resistance to something, and then we feel like, oh, well, yeah, this is what's happening. This is just this experience with resistance. And there's a little bit of a feeling of, whew, that can be held. That's wisdom, creating the conditions to hold it. I would often say to Sayadaw something like, well, awareness held that. And he said, wisdom held that. It's wisdom that's doing that. So awareness is there supporting the ability to recognize what's here, but it's wisdom creating that shift. So feeling a shift of perspective, a sense of, oh, it's just confusion arising. It's just a thought. We might see how a pattern is unfolding in a kind of causes and conditions. We might see a thought arise and then an emotion follow from that thought, and see, you know, that the condition that I didn't decide for that emotion to arise. I didn't decide for that thought to arise. The thought arose, the emotion followed, seeing the conditioned nature of experience and the underlying understanding, which might not be quite fully experienced, that I didn't do it. Now, wisdom is revealing the process nature of experience. Sometimes we see that directly. So we could call these like insights or shifts of understanding. Sometimes the insights, when I first heard the word insight practice, I was thinking of like big, like mind-blowing kinds of insights, not these little shifts of experience. I thought I just had to sit for long enough that some kind of big kablooey insight would happen and I'd be free. That's what I thought at the beginning. And then finally, through talking to my teachers, it's like, oh, actually just seeing these little moments of a shift, that's where the cultivation, that is wisdom growing. Occasionally we have some like amazing, mind-blowing kind of insights that feel very transformative in the moment. But so much of the practice is in this gradual nature of small insights accumulating, small insights supporting the growth of wisdom as a quality of mind that arises more and more frequently. Sometimes when we turn our attention to something, it's like, oh, there's suffering, and kind of there's a curiosity, there's a kind of an orientation to, wow, what's that? And there's a kind of interest that arises, and immediately that suffering vanishes. I didn't trust this early on, this kind of seeing, actually. I went to my teacher and I said, I don't know how to observe emotions. She said, well, what did you experience? I said, well, I noticed that there was a kind of a depression. And then, you know, when I tried to look at it, it vanished. It went away. And she said, trust your experience. This was Carol. Carol, love Carol. I'm so grateful for Carol. Trust your experience. That's what happened. And as I reflected back on, I mean, I thought it was like bypassing there. And this that question can come up. Sometimes there can be a kind of a turning away from, but this was a turning towards. I turned towards the experience. I wasn't trying to flee from it. I was like, well, what is that anyway? And I think what happened in that moment was there was so much interest and so much curiosity that it just revealed this was an impermanent phenomenon and poof, it vanished. So sometimes that can be the experience that something will vanish upon being seen. A quick disappearance. So there's a lot of these kind. These are just a few that many of you've already, I'd say probably all of you have already experienced something like this in your practice. Wisdom has been working. And the recognition of these small moments of the shift, they allow our they begin to help our confidence to grow, also our sense of the value of practice for that to grow. So it supports a lot of wholesome qualities to kind of attune to at times, to be curious about how is wisdom working? Wisdom is often experienced. And in a way, this makes sense to me because the Four Noble Truths are expressed around dukkha, suffering, unease, unsatisfactoriness. Wisdom is often experienced related to a shift around dukkha or some kind of understanding or recognition of dukkha. So seeing. Oh, it's just, and feeling like, oh, it's okay. This is just dukkha arising, or this is just something happening now. This is a process unfolding. Or seeing some dukkha vanish, seeing a kind of a pattern or habit fall away. Wisdom can also be experienced or connected to, when dukkha is not arising, when greed, aversion, and delusion are not arising, wisdom may be at work there. Sometimes it's concentration, kind of putting the hindrances at bay. It can be concentration, but sometimes there is also wisdom in the equation when defilements, when reactive patterns, greed, aversion, delusion are not arising. Sometimes the experience or the recognition of the non-arising of dukkha, sometimes that's more known in a way. It's more of an understanding in a way than a direct experience. One of the ways I've experienced this kind and kind of knew, well, wisdom is here in that seeing that a particular habit of reactivity is not happening in a situation in which it often happened in the past. Some kind of wisdom may be there supporting that non-reactivity, that non-reactivity, that or the reactivity to not arise. Or sometimes there might be a clear understanding of not as reactive. There's a little bit of reactivity, but not as reactive as I used to be. Wisdom growing, strengthening, supporting more of an ability to have some balance and equanimity around a situation we've previously been so reactive to. So this is just a real kind of overview or highlight around ways we might notice wisdom at work. It's not conceptual. There is the experience, there can be the experience of the arising of wisdom, the knowing of wisdom also, the experience of wisdom, the experience of awareness and wisdom together. There's a couple of questions about wisdom in the chat. So I'll start with those. How does reflection relate to wisdom? It seems like it is a part of it. Where reflection is, there is wisdom. I see reflection as a type of thinking, but not exactly thinking like thinking about a task as at work or something like that. Reflection seems to arise, and I don't think it necessarily feels volitional. So we may be using a reflection in different ways here. Thoughts arise at times, and sometimes those thoughts are arising connected to wisdom. Sometimes they arise connected to delusion. So that kind of speaks to a couple questions further. Are there markers to look for to recognize when a thought is just a thought and let it pass, and when it's actually wisdom expressing an insight? And I'm curious about the connection between wisdom and intuition. So this notion of reflection and thoughts arising, it's not always the case that when thoughts arise from what we might call intuition, that they are expressing wisdom. Sometimes delusion produces thoughts that feel an awful lot like intuition. So we do have to be careful about assuming that a kind of a thought arising out of a thought arising out of the subconscious, so that it's a wholesome kind of thought. And I think that, the markers really to look for, is it connected to the orientation of curiosity about experience, curiosity about the impermanent, unreliable, not self nature to exp of experience? Or is it connected to, something? What does it have a feeling of, really, kind of connected to who I am, what I need to do? Does it have a sense of congealing around a sense of self? It's coming with delusion. So those are a few things. I think part of it is just learning with time. The clarification of thoughts that are helpful and thoughts that are not helpful is something that is cultivated over time. There's a sutta that the Buddha talks about, what are thoughts to cultivate, what are thoughts not to cultivate. And I take some inspiration from this, because he talks about kind of talks about his own practice. He says, well, when I was Before I became awakened, I looked at my thoughts, and it's like I could see some thoughts would lead to suffering. And other thoughts would not lead to suffering. In fact, they would lead on to freedom and wisdom, that they cultivated and supported wisdom. And he said, I found it useful to let go of the thoughts that are based in sense desire, kind of that wanting to head towards sense pleasure, thoughts that are based in cruelty, and thoughts that are based in harming. This is kind of the teaching on intention, essentially. He says thoughts that have those kind of intentions connected with them, they are not worth pursuing, and should be abandoned. And yet, abandoning here, I think one of the ways to abandon is to open to and become aware that it's there, not to push away, not to say, I shouldn't be thinking that thought. That thought has already risen, so it's there. So a way of abandoning, by shifting to the curiosity of, well, that's happening. What is that experience like? That brings in some wisdom. That brings in the wisdom perspective of what's the actual experience in the moment. And then he said that the other side of the equation, thoughts based in non-harming, non-cruelty or compassion, and renunciation, or the kind of not aiming towards sense pleasure. Those are thoughts to cultivate. And he said, one of the things he said is, I saw that I could think those thoughts all day and all night, and no one would come to harm if I thought those thoughts. So he's using the distinction of, does thinking those thoughts lead in the direction of harm to myself or others or both? So this is his guidance, when thoughts arise spontaneously. Is this thought helpful in terms of leading away from harming, leading away from affliction? And he also said that the thinking of those thoughts can lead to wisdom, can lead to the growth of wisdom. So there is a place for the reflection with those thoughts, to linger with them at times, to think about them. And yet the Buddha does say, if I kept thinking those thoughts, then the mind would basically stay at a certain level of kind of agitation. The thought, thinking thoughts is a kind of a process in the mind that produces ripples in the mind. And so he said, there's a time to let go of thoughts and just be with experience, to just be, to let the mind settle in just meeting experience moment to moment. So I use the word reflection often in terms of a reflective practice, in which case we're consciously bringing a kind of a situation to mind and allowing the present moment awareness to hold that thought. So that's often how I use reflection. It's a kind of a place that is allowing a meditative container in which to process content, the thoughts, the situations of our lives. And I wanted to speak to a question that somebody sent just to me about grief, working with grief, which often feels really big, a lot in there, a lot. The person says there's a lot of hindrances, almost all of the hindrances feel like they can be in there. And there was a session the other day where I did a guided meditation on holding some of our scenarios. So in this case, the scenario or the situation around the grief, and exploring the whole of it. So the question, or feeling like the grief is bigger than the container of awareness, that can happen when, awareness can grow and expand to meet the grief. Awareness can hold or be a field that's broader than the grief. And that reflection I did the other day, I think the session was called Reflective Practice. That one might be supportive for you to listen to. You asked, maybe I could point to a session that would be supportive. I may have spoken about grief in some of the sessions, but not in a real direct way. So, but a lot of what was explored in that session on reflective practice might be useful to exploring the grief. So, a question: is wisdom equal to skillfulness? Can it be recognized only in hindsight? Well, skillfulness can be recognized in the moment, and I would say that there is a connection between wisdom and the direction of skillfulness. That the movement of mind towards letting go of greed, aversion, and delusion, skillful qualities of mind are those that are not based in greed, aversion, and delusion, and wisdom inclines towards those qualities of mind. So it's not it's not always only recognized in hindsight. It can be seen in hindsight. It can be seen after the fact, as we kind of look. Kind of, for me, looking back at my experience after I began to understand what wisdom was, I could, in hindsight, see that wisdom was operating a lot in my practice, and it had been operating all along. I just hadn't quite clearly seen it. But Yeah, so it can be noticed directly in the moment. Wisdom can be noticed while it's happening. And that can be the experience of the arising of an insight in a moment, the understanding, that experience of clearly seeing right in this moment, oh, this is just a thought arising. That's seeing wisdom happening right directly in the moment. So there was a question about a link to the guided meditation around grief. It's in Audio Dharma. If you go to the retreat information page that we've been posting all of the, I've been posting a lot of resources and things like that on. And also I'll say something about that in a minute. If you go there, there's a link to the entire set of recordings for this retreat, and it's found in that set of recordings. There is a specific link that would be available to it, but I can't post it right now. Somebody else might be able to put that put that in there, but. But you can find it. That retreat information page that Yosh sent you at the very beginning of retreat, that's a living document that's been being updated. Something else about that, I did actually update that document this morning with a couple things, some resources about where my teachings are found, and also to acknowledge that this retreat, like all events sponsored by IMC and IRC, this event is offered on a donation basis. And if you would, if you have the interest or inclination to offer donations to support either myself or IMC and IRC, there's a link available on that page. To offer donations. This retreat is sponsored by IMC, and at the in the last couple weeks before the retreat, IRC stepped in to support the number of people that are here. I didn't have an IMC did not have an account available. We have some accounts available for large gatherings, but there wasn't one available for this week. So IRC stepped in, and I'm very grateful to IRC for stepping in to support this retreat. So this retreat is really supported by both IMC and IRC. So it's a lovely thing. Somebody posted some of the links. So there are a number of questions that are still lingering from the submitted questions. And I don't know that I'll get to all the questions. I think some of them have been answered kind of in the flow of the teachings. And I've kind of been noting, okay, I kind of answered that one. I sort of, gotten the terrain of that one. But here's one that's this feels kind of connected in a way to the reflective practice we were just talking about. So I'll read this one. This came in yesterday, I think. I hung out with a challenge. First, I couldn't do it because there was so much going on, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, and then collapsed and gave up. Then the general feeling came up. There was a sadness, a deep sadness. Then the words came, I am here. And there was a kind of a release, a calm groundedness came over me. And the general feeling was love. So this sounds like it was, related to experiencing something in this way I was talking about in that reflective practice, the broader sense of connecting with a scenario and then seeing what arises. Then there was a kind of exploration of doing it again. I did this again yesterday, and what came up for me instead was anger, fear, and sadness. A mess, actually. And around this was chaos. Interesting, the person said, which I loved. I loved that interesting was the response to this, and not like, what was I doing wrong? So the question, can there be two different results for the given challenge? So yes, a given scenario or situation we're working with or something. Each time we might bring something into that kind of reflective scenario or that reflective practice and open to the fullness of it, what's here with it, the kind of the big picture of what are the feeling, what's the feeling that seems connected to the whole of this, it may be different at different times. It may be different, it may be connected to, like in the first case, I don't know, you know, about why it actually happened, but here's a plausible or a possible reason why it kind of happened in this order. And the first time there was kind of the sense of the capacity to hold it. Holding it with love, the calm, the groundedness. So there's the capacity to hold something. And when that capacity to hold something's available, sometimes there's more room for more things to come up. So seeing it later, it's kind of like the system goes, okay, yeah, here's some more to look at. And so that each time we look at something, there may be something different to see, a different set of broad conditions or broad feelings that are associated with an experience. So yes, many, many different kinds of experiences can happen in exploring this reflective practice or connecting to a particular situation that we find challenging. Then there are some questions about the awareness when it's not clear what awareness is aware of, and awareness without an object of awareness. So somebody asked, I'm puzzled on how it is sometimes that it's not clear that not clear what awareness is aware of, that we don't know. And this person mentioned that this can happen when my mind is overwhelmed. But then there's still awareness. And in that case, you know, what might be happening in that case is that there is something happening, like the overwhelm is happening. And so that's really what's pervading the awareness. That's what awareness is really kind of connecting with. If we have an agenda or an idea about what I should be aware of is particular sensations or objects or particular feelings that are happening within the, you know, more precise kind of experience, sometimes we can't know that when there's a kind of perhaps an overwhelm or a tiredness or a kind of a fogginess or a dullness of mind. Sometimes the mind can't really connect with experience with precision. And so we think that we're not aware of an object. So it's got to do almost with the agenda at times that we can't notice that we're not aware of the object. It's kind of maybe the agenda of what we think awareness should be aware of, that we can't really see that what awareness is aware of is this broad sense of overwhelm or the broad sense of tiredness or dullness or fogginess or sleepiness. So that's one reason why we might not know the object that the awareness is aware of, that there's some broad pervading state that is kind of obscuring the things we think we should be aware of. And then in a similar way, sometimes those broad pervading states are very subtle. We've talked about the broad pervading states that are kind of obvious, the broad pervading, really strong states. And those can obscure other experience. So we might think, well, there's this broad pervading state happening, but I can't be aware. We may even doubt the awareness there until we begin to recognize, oh, what actually awareness is knowing is this broad pervading, really strong state, the chaos or the overwhelm or something like that. Those broad pervading states can also be diffuse or vague or subtle. And sometimes the reason we don't know what we're aware of is because what awareness is really connecting with, awareness and wisdom, as wisdom gets stronger, this kind of state may happen, that wisdom at times begins to direct the practice. Wisdom decides what to pay attention to. And when that starts happening, sometimes wisdom is orienting towards, at least this is what how I frame it to myself. It feels like wisdom is orienting towards subtler experience than I consciously know. And so the experience is kind of there's the awareness, there's the clear sense that there's awareness, and there's just an unclarity about what the object would be. And this may be because the object of awareness is unfamiliar, often in this vague, subtle, diffuse quality. So that might be what is happening too, that as wisdom gets stronger, as awareness and wisdom strengthen, it's like wisdom is guiding the practice at that point. And it does tend to move in the direction of freedom, freedom perhaps being the most subtle experience, the most subtle non-experience, the most subtle kind of thing. Non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion can be a pretty subtle kind of experience. There is described, as I said in the suttas, there's described the possibility of awareness without an object, non-manifesting awareness, it's called. This state, most likely, most of us probably are not experiencing this state when we think, oh, I'm aware, but I'm not aware of the object. That state is one of, there's a description of maybe what's referred to there is consciousness without perception and feeling. And so when there's a consciousness that's neither perceiving nor feeling experience, that's not something that's in an ordinary state of mind. It's a very kind of refined state of mind. There would be no recognition of anything happening. And in fact, my understanding is I don't know if I've experienced this or not. There was a state at one point where I experienced an arising of consciousness out of like a long stretch of not being conscious. And I went and, it didn't feel like it was like a wisdom kind of thing, but it to me, it, you know, I didn't associate it with like, oh, that was Nibbana. That's not what I, not how it felt, but there was this clear, like, consciousness just arose and there hadn't been anything for a stretch of time before that. And I went and talked about it to Joseph, and he said, well, there's like five different ways we can experience this kind of cessation kind of experience. It might be strong rapture, it might be, sleepiness, but it was very, what was distinct for me, it didn't feel like I was waking up out of falling asleep because there was so much clarity. And there was like, when I wake up out of falling asleep, there was a kind of a sense of what had been happening in sleep. There's kind of an ongoing consciousness and feeling and perception that are happening when we're asleep. And so when we wake up out of sleep, there's often kind of the lingering sense of the continuity of time. This experience was just like there had been nothing. As far as I could tell, there was nothing that was happening before that. There was no recollection of anything except this moment of very clear seeing consciousness arising in this moment. It's like, I'm back. That's what it felt like. I'm back. Kind of like it feels after you come out of being sedated or something like that. I had been sedated at one point, and there was this kind of a similarity. So the state of non-manifesting awareness, my understanding is that really you only can know anything about it after the fact. It's not something you can know anything about in the fact because perception and feeling are not functioning. Consciousness is not manifesting with anything. It's not arising with anything. So, you know, don't go looking for that. It might, there's a possibility that something like that could happen. What I'd say is that in those times when it feels like there's awareness without an object, there's some object there. There is an object there. And it's either just too subtle to really connect with, or it's being obscured by something else. And it's really useful in that time when you recognize there's awareness. Even if you don't know the object, don't get hung up so much on the fact that you don't know the object. It's like, that's a great time to recognize, yes, there is awareness. We often doubt the awareness in those times. We feel like if I don't know clearly the object, it must not be awareness. So this is a time to begin to cultivate the confidence. And yes, I do know that I'm aware. What's happening is that the object is not clear. Awareness is clear, the object is not clear. There's a great value to that. It really begins to cultivate that recognition of awareness itself. Then there was a question connected to awareness of awareness, you know, is something else observing the awareness? Is there a witness? And I would say awareness observes awareness, the process of awareness. And it's again, it's not so much observing, it's almost more knowing the awareness, the sense of awareness, the processes of the aggregates, feeling, perception, consciousness, mental formations, and the body are self-reflective. They observe themselves, but there's nothing in there that is kind of separate that does the observing. Awareness awares, feeling feels, consciousness knows, perception perceives. They function in and of themselves without an observer or a something to do them. They process in and of themselves. There have been a couple of questions. This is a different topic at this point. A couple of questions around addiction and compulsive behavior. How to work with it. What's the perspective this practice has about it? And I would say Addiction is really strong craving, really strong craving. That's been sometimes the strength of the craving can actually be connected to bodily needs, bodily experiences with some drug addiction. It actually, hooks into some of our physical needs and creates a lot of physical distress if we don't get that. But it's ultimately connected to craving, wanting a particular kind of state or pleasure. And this also can have to do with kind of compulsive behavior. I think of the computer, and there was an actual question about this, like getting lost and scrolling through news or social media, the way the applications are designed is designed to hook into that craving process. They are Google itself, it's designed to hook into that process of getting satisfied by something we look for, something we want, and then getting it. And the quick feedback loop that happens in that cycle really strongly reinforces the craving. Because what happens with craving is that when we crave, the craving itself is unpleasant. That feeling of craving is unpleasant. And so we want it to go away. There's a feeling of lack. There's a feeling of something I don't have. And in the work, in the exploration or in the connection with the social media or with searching something in Google, it's like we look for something, we want to know something, we want some information, and we type it in, and immediately we get, 100 websites that give us places to look for that information. We get a hit of satisfaction. We get a hit of, oh, there's an answer to that question. I wanted something, now I have it. So there's a feedback, and there's a moment of a feeling of the release of that wanting and the having something. So that's a pleasant experience that we get that thing that we want. And because that getting that thing is yet another impermanent, unreliable thing, it doesn't have a lot of staying power. And so the last time we felt pretty good was when we got something that we wanted. So we go looking for something else to want. So we end up on that kind of a cycle, the wanting to want. I have found myself sitting in front of that Google box, what do I want to want? What do I want to type in there? What do I want to find out? So again, just noticing the pattern. And sometimes we won't notice it until we're well into it. And there's a kind of an icky feeling, having been kind of stuck in that craving loop. It just feels so sticky. It feels so, stuck that when we become aware of it, there's a power to it because we've been cultivating. Whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. And so it's got some momentum to it. And so some strength of, things to help you remember this is not helpful. Just closing the computer, it's like sometimes we are just lost in it. There's not much we can do when we're just lost in it. When we notice that we're lost in it, sometimes there has to be a firm no. This may be one of those times where it's useful to, in the Buddhist instructions on working with thoughts, the last instruction was one just like says no. You just, bear down with your tongue pressed against the roof of your mouth and you say no to that thing. This may be a time to do that. That level of willpower may be necessary to begin to move away from those. You can start by seeing, can I be aware of that icky feeling? At this point, for me, often that's enough. It's like, oh yeah, I'm stuck, but oh yeah, this is not worth it. And so I don't have to do that. All I have to do is become aware of the kind of tumbling on of trying to find satisfaction someplace that's not very reliable. And there can be a letting go of it. But sometimes the pattern, if the pattern is that strong, sometimes you just have to do something to just say, yep, I am just going to turn this off right in the middle of this. I'm not even going to finish this search. Just close the computer and walk away. Just say no to it. And I know that's easier said than done. Keep exploring. And I'd say when you're not caught by it, at times when you're not caught by it, a time when you're kind of out in the world and feeling the kind of benefit of being present and aware, maybe taking a walk. It's like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to not be caught by that craving. So noticing the absence of that kind of craving, because that can help you to feel, again, the value of this practice. And the value of the absence of those kind of states. So, noticing the presence, noticing the absence can be helpful in there too. And this is challenging, and there may well need to be some with physical addiction, some support, some physical support, and perhaps some support with psychotherapy, some support to help you understand those patterns. I do think that meditation can work well with certain kinds of therapy, to the awareness of what's here. So we don't have to just deny or feel like there's not a place for other kinds of support to help us to find our way, to navigate our way with really challenging situations. There's a lot of great tools out there, as we pointed to with some of the trauma. The trauma tools. There's a bunch of other questions around integrating this practice with other practices that I'll talk about this afternoon. And I'll also save the chat so that because I saw a couple of other questions came in, so I'll save the chat to hopefully respond to some of those this afternoon.